Wayne Shorter on tenor sax with his own composition, Footprints, which became a jazz standard. It first appeared on his 1966 album, Adam's Apple, with Herbie Hancock on piano, Reggie Workman on bass, and Joe Chambers on drums. Shorter, who had performed at the Kennedy Center Honors in 2013 to celebrate Herbie Hancock, himself will be recognized at the 2018 prestigious award ceremony this year in December. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and well, you may want to keep a piece of paper and a pen handy for a little bit down the road when we get into the meat of the program. But look at what's going on. So much is going on. And the top of the list, I think, is that Jeff Sessions is having quite a laugh, quite a time watching Donald Trump squirm with this trial that is going on with Manafort, a Trump operative on trial. Trump and his, what do you call him, his second, Rudolph Giuliani, is insisting that the trial must end now. Stop this probe now. Which means that Mueller is pretty close to territory. They don't want him anywhere near, because, you know, the whole thing with Manafort, if you've been following the trial, which started yesterday, a lot of it has to do with hiding money, millions and tens of millions of dollars, hiding a lot of money earned as a, quote, consultant, unquote, to overseas governments, principally Russia and the Ukraine, and hiding them in various secret accounts so that they don't show up anywhere, and never declaring himself either to be a foreign agent or never let it be known that he actually earned a sum very different from what he reported on his taxes. So that's the direction of the trial, and it's making Donald Trump very nervous. The assumption was that the trial of Manafort would concentrate on the question of Russian interference. Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election, in which Manafort, of course, played a key role. He was Donald Trump's campaign guy, who headed up the campaign and choreographed the campaign. So when they announced that early on, well, there was trepidation, but not the kind of trepidation that they're seeing now. In the span of just one day, the thrust of the trial is about Manafort hiding a lot of money, from all these foreign sources without actually registering as a foreign agent for these governments and without declaring the true totals that he had. He established more than 30 secret accounts, and they stressed yesterday, and today they're continuing with the whole idea of Manafort's excessively luxurious lifestyle. He apparently loves clothes. He spent more than $800,000 in purchasing clothes. And that's funny, because he looks ordinary. His clothes don't give him the look and the panache that you would expect for a guy spending that kind of money on clothes, including buying a $15,000 jacket made of ostrich. Now, this is the kind of sickness you see when people are so drunk with power, they actually literally lose themselves. And there's nobody to kind of stabilize them and keep them focused on the business of, okay, so you've gotten a lot of money under strange means and you're hiding it, but can you hold on to it? You're so dumb. You're giving everybody an indication that you really ought to be looked at. So that is the direction that the trial is going. And it is making Giuliani, who is now the lead advisor, it seems, to Donald Trump, which tells you that Donald Trump is not a smart man. Anybody who has followed Rudy Giuliani's legal career knows that he lost a lot of cases on appeal and upon review and on matters of law. So he's not that smart. He's not that well-versed in matters of law, but somehow or the other, Trump has him as his lead advisor. And Giuliani is demanding, calling, going on any show that would have them, and demanding an end to this trial, an end to this probe in general, because now, if they had doubts about where this trial and this probe were going, it was confirmed from the start of the trial yesterday. When the expectation was that they'll be talking politics and they'll be talking who knew what and when and whatnot, this took a whole different direction. Mueller isn't going anywhere close to whether people meddled or didn't meddle in the trial and what role did Paul Manafort play, and he's not touching that. They're starting off with money. Now, what does that mean? Anybody who has been observing these kinds of cases, what that did was send a major clarion call to anybody paying attention. Hello, Donald Trump. Hello, Rudolph Giuliani. That they possibly could come after Trump on exactly the same issues. Where is your money? How have you accounted for it? Where did you make your money? Where did you stash your money? And that, let me tell you, absolutely is keeping Donald Trump up late at night. He can't sleep. Because what they were expecting has not so far happened. The thrust is specifically about money earned under questionable circumstances, hidden all over the place in all these secret accounts, taxes not paid on them. And later on, if they have to, they'll get to the question of meddling in elections and serving as an advisor on both sides. Or I should say on all sides, since Manafort was connected with Ukraine, connected with Russia, and of course with Donald Trump. So it's a very interesting way that they're approaching this case. I find it very fascinating. They're building the drama, but very quietly. They are not starting this case where people expected that it would start. To find out who knew whom, who met with whom. They're not even dealing with that. They just started right where it hurts. How much money did you make? You're talking in 1 year, on one account, he made $60 million. Advising. And the inference here is with advising with the knowledge of Donald Trump. You see? So it's a very fascinating tactic that they're using. We're not talking politics at all. Just show me the money and how you stashed it, where you stashed it, how much you stashed, how many accounts you had, and how come the money you said you made is not reflected in your IRS forms and reports. You're not yourself registered as a foreign agent, but you're all over the place. In Ukraine, in Russia, you're a man of the world. And you're spending money like nobody's business because you're making tons of money. And the inference all along is these things were not unknown to Trump. But by the time they get to Trump, Trump knows right now, this is where they're going crazy. They know, he knows right now, Giuliani knows right now, that inevitably where they're going to get Trump is on the issue of his tax returns. Show us the money. They're not even going to prioritize this Russia meddling thing. They're not going to talk about that. They're going to talk about Trump prior even to his election and his business dealings in that corner of the world. And by the time they make certain links, say to between Trump and known Russian mobsters, between the known Russian mobsters and their penchant for money laundering, and Trump being in the construction business and the hotel business, and how it is that in some cases almost half the building, half of a building with all these luxurious condos ended up with these money laundering mobsters as tenants. So it's going to get very interesting. And believe me, from yesterday to today, it is clear where Mueller is going and where this investigation is going. So that is why an urgent demand that this probe must stop now. You know, if they were to talk about the, you know, the election, who was in the room, what did they say, how many times did they meet, you know, what's the connection between any meetings that were had and policies that were enacted, they don't have time for that. That's not where they're going. That's not where they could make their hardest hit. At least that's what my estimation is. They are going to go at this from an oblique angle, but a devastating one. And it is where Donald Trump is most vulnerable. People have demanded, even before he ran for office, that he make his tax returns public. He hasn't done so. And he doesn't intend to do that. He said that. He doesn't intend to do that. But but he can be ordered to answer some questions about his money. And that brings in a whole coterie of individuals who know a thing or two about how Donald Trump and the people he put in charge of this very task to handle the money, how much money did he make? Where did it go? Where are the tax forms that correspond to any claims that he could make about money? Fascinating, isn't it? That's why I like court cases, because it's really a tactical game. And really good lawyers are great at this business of studying a person or studying the various scenarios in a case, and they determine which is the hardest place to hit. And where the person that they're after is most vulnerable, and they go straight there. And if anybody's paying attention, you can't miss this hint at all. So we'll hear more squawking from Trump and his second, Rudy Giuliani, but they can't escape the demand for IRS reports. And this is not just about Trump. This is about a whole bunch of people, including Trump's daughter, his son-in-law, his two sons, maybe even his wives. It gets bigger and bigger and deeper because it will ensnare the Russians, who in fact are responsible for Donald Trump's and the Trump Organization's, in large measure, they're responsible for its very solvency. That's where he got a lot of money, to keep him afloat when his casinos were closing, when his luxury apartments were and condos were not renting, when he was practically upside down in his projects. It's going to get fascinating, so buckle up. But I want to talk now about this Stand Your Ground law in Florida. And in 24 other states, by the way, Florida being the first to enact it. On July the 19th, security cameras outside a Clearwater, Florida convenience store captured a violent altercation between two men, one white, one black. It appeared that they had a heated verbal exchange during which the black man shoved the white man who fell to the ground. The footage showed the white man, identified as Michael Draker, pulling out a handgun and shooting the black man, identified as Marquise McLaughlin, who staggered back to the store. McLaughlin died, but his killer has not been arrested or even charged. Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri quickly became the target of public outrage. But he says that Florida law prohibits him from either arresting or charging Draker, who has invoked Florida's infamous Stand Your Ground law as the basis for his deadly action. Sheriff Gualtieri yesterday called a news conference to explain how the Stand Your Ground law applies in the case and what it allows him to do and not to do, notwithstanding the public's opinion. We'll be covering different aspects of this case, but I thought this would be a good place to start, and that is listening to Sheriff Bob Gualtieri and his perspective on the Stand Your Ground law and how he, as a lawman, is dealing with this law and the circumstance that exists. We have a dead person. We have the person who killed that man identified, and it is logical in the minds of many people that by now, certainly, this happened on July 19th, the identity of the gunman is known, and he's available. Everybody knows where he lives, and so the question naturally becomes, how is it that he's not arrested? How is it that he can be free to walk around? So this was a news conference held yesterday, and I want to play the explanation directly from Sheriff Gualtieri's point of view about this Stand Your Ground law and how it factors into the case as it stands right now. Here he is.
We're here this morning, as we put out in the media alert earlier this morning, we're here to discuss the shooting that occurred a week ago, Thursday. I had a meeting last week with the Upper Pinellas Ministerial Alliance and the Upper Pinellas branch of the NAACP. We had a good discussion. We had a good meeting. I thought it was very productive, and decided as a result of that meeting to hold a press conference today jointly with them to let everybody know where the investigation is, the status of the investigation, and to hopefully clear up some things that they conveyed to me were of concern in the community. My relationship with them has been longstanding, and have a good dialogue and a good relationship with both organizations. And for some reason, they called about a half hour ago and said that they weren't coming. So you have to ask them why. I'm disappointed they're not here. I continue to want to have a good relationship with them, and I know we'll have that, and work with them so that people have an understanding, not just in this case, but in all cases, about what we do, why we do it. And that dialogue is very important to me. But the fact remains is that here at the last minute, they decided not to come. And I decided that we'll go ahead anyway and convey to you what I was going to convey with them here. So a lot of things have been said since this incident happened on July 19th. A whole bunch of people have offered a whole bunch of different opinions. And I'd suggest to you that the mere fact that so many people have so many different opinions validates that the decision not to arrest Draka at this state, in this stage, is correct under the law. The facts of this case can lead reasonable people to different determinations. And as I'll discuss more here in a few minutes, the law says don't arrest in this situation and let the state attorney figure it out. So as I begin, I ask everyone to keep in mind that not all the evidence has been made public. We've seen different versions of the video and interviewed many people whose statements have not been considered by those offering their opinions, not seen by the public or by the media. Accurate facts matter, and all the evidence must be fully considered in any case, but especially a case like this, before anyone forms a final opinion. That includes opinions formed based on camera angles without the benefit of witness statements. The camera angle some people are basing their opinion on is high into the east. And remember, the Draka was northwest and on the ground. Also, no one offering an opinion on this case about what was done or not done has the right to change or embellish the facts, because changing or embellishing the facts changes the outcome. I tried to be clear in the press conference a week ago Friday, but there remain some serious and important misunderstandings about the investigation and its status that I need to address. So to the extent that I was not clear previously, let me do so now. This is an ongoing investigation by the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office, and it is an open case. We are still actively investigating this matter. We have not turned the case over to the state attorney's office, but we anticipate doing so shortly. You know, this is a very long route on a path, and this is the first stop on that route. So just picture a bus route with a bunch of different stops, and this is the first stop. This is not the final stop. Any decisions that have been made are preliminary decisions at this stage of the case and are based on the facts and based upon the law to be applied at this stage. These decisions, as I said, are not final as to whether Draca should or is going to be charged. The final charging decision will be made by the state attorney, as the law says it should in this situation. I've said from day one that this case will be referred to the state attorney's office. I've never said the investigation is complete or over, and in fact, I've said the contrary. As far as my decision not to arrest Draca, my decision is based on the requirements of Florida's Stand Your Ground law. It is a preliminary decision about arrest and not a final decision about charges. Again, I make decisions about an arrest, and the state attorney makes decisions about charges. That's our system. If charges are filed, then a judge decides whether to dismiss the case, and if not, a jury decides guilt, followed by an appellate court deciding if the prior decisions were right or wrong. Again, there are many steps in the process along this route. My decision not to arrest is because Florida law creates a situation where someone is immune from arrest if their conduct is arguably within the parameters of Stand Your Ground. This is not a defense to be merely asserted at trial or after commencement of criminal proceedings. This is an immunity from arrest. So look at the law. The law says that law enforcement, quote, may not arrest. Look at Florida Statute 776.032. Now, a lot of people have, again, offered a whole bunch of opinions. They need to do so with the statute in front of them and look at the case law. So let's do that, because this thing's got twisted around so many different ways. A person who uses or threatens to use force as permitted under the law is justified in such conduct and immune from criminal prosecution. And that section of the statute goes on to define immune from criminal prosecution as including arrest or detaining somebody in custody. So you are immune from arrest and immune from being detained in custody. It goes on to say that a law enforcement agency may use standard procedures for investigating the use or threatened use of force, but the agency may not arrest for using or threatening to use force unless it determines there's probable cause that the force used or threatened was unlawful. To determine that, we have to consider the person's authority to use force. Because if someone has authority to use force, then it's not unlawful. And if they have authority to use force, then you don't have probable cause that an offense has been committed. So look at the statute that authorizes people to use force. It says that somebody is justified under 776.012. A person is justified in using or threatening to use deadly force if he or she reasonably believes that using or threatening to use such force is necessary to prevent imminent death or great bodily harm to himself or herself. That statute goes on to say that a person who uses or threatens to use force in accordance with the subsection does not have a duty to retreat, has the right to stand his or her ground if the person using or threatening to use the deadly force is not engaged in criminal activity and is in a place where they have a right to be. Draca was not engaged in criminal activity, and he had a legal right to be where he was. So go back to the beginning of the statute. And when the Florida legislature passed the bill that resulted in this statute, look at what they wrote in the preamble of 776.032. It says the legislature finds that it is proper for law-abiding people to protect themselves, their families, and others from intruders and attackers without fear of prosecution. Remember, it's defined in there, prosecution includes arrest and being detained. Without fear of prosecution for acting in defense of themselves or others. So look at what the Florida Supreme Court has said about this in a 2010 decision in a case called State versus Dennis. The Supreme Court said that this immunity provision expressly grants defendants a substantive right not to be arrested, detained, charged, or prosecuted as a result of the use of legally justified force. The statute does not merely provide that a defendant cannot be convicted as a result of legally justified force. The Supreme Court went on to say that it doesn't limit its grants of immunity to cases where material facts are disputed or undisputed. Immunity applies even where facts are in dispute, such as this case. The Supreme Court went on to say the grant of immunity from criminal prosecution, again, that includes arrest, must be interpreted in a manner that provides the defendant with more protection from prosecution, including arrest, for a justified use of force than the probable cause determination previously provided for prior to Stand Your Ground. Simply put, a probable cause decision to arrest must be balanced against the immunity from arrest claimed under the justifiable use of force. In sum, the law has taken away law enforcement discretion to arrest unless there is no stand your ground as a matter of law. To arrest, it must be so clear that as a matter of law, stand your ground does not apply in any way to the facts and circumstances that you're presented with. That is not the situation here. The facts are not so clear that this is absolutely outside the boundaries of stand your ground. So in order for me to arrest, it has to be as a matter of law outside the boundaries of stand your ground. If it's not, which this is not, then the law says you may not arrest, and the person is entitled to immunity from arrest and from detention. Remember, you all don't have all of the facts and have not seen all of the evidence because it is an ongoing investigation. I've seen the evidence. And this is unlike any other situation in Florida law. Normally, we evaluate whether there's probable cause that a crime has been committed. And if so, we make an arrest and charge the offense. We don't normally work to evaluate or investigate defenses that someone may raise. But not here, because this is not what the legislature and the courts have said is required in a stand your ground situation. When the legislature created Florida's stand your ground law, it said we don't want people who have arguably acted within stand your ground law to sit in jail while the state attorney's office spends weeks or months considering whether to file formal charges. When a citizen, and in this case a concealed carry permit holder, has claimed that they acted in self-defense, it should be closely considered before having that person sit in jail. So what the legislature said is law enforcement may not arrest, leave that person out, and let the state attorney's office figure it out. And that is simply what we're doing here. The recently created burden that the state has to prove the shooter is not entitled to stand your ground immunity by clear and convincing evidence is relevant at this stage, too, because it goes to the person claiming stand your ground's right not to sit in jail while all this is sorted out on an issue where the burden on the state is high. So my decision not to arrest is merely doing what Florida law compels. Don't leave somebody sitting in jail who claims they acted in self-defense while the state attorney figures it out and makes his decision, which could take weeks or months. My decision not to arrest is not condoning or approving Drake's actions. Make no mistake about that. But I have to apply the law as written at this stage of the proceedings. I stand by what I said previously, and that I believe in the adage that just because you can does not mean you should. Does this law create a situation where people reverse the adage and do because they can and not because they should? And does it create a shoot first and ask questions later mentality in some people? Well, I'll leave all that to those opining on the topic. It'll give them something else to talk about tonight. The immunity from arrest is what drives my decision because it eliminates law enforcement's discretion in this case. Absent that immunity from arrest and the recently enhanced burden on the state to show by clear and convincing evidence that Draca is not entitled to this immunity, Draca would be sitting in jail right now and the system would be working to figure it out. The easy thing in some respects would have been for me to arrest Draca and kick it to the state attorney. The easy thing is not the right thing or the legal thing to do based upon the application of law in this case. I've never done anything because it's the easy way or what some might call the politically expedient thing to do, and I'm not going to start doing it today. I believe in the rule of law and that my obligation is to follow its dictates. I don't make the law, and I do not do what people want because of outrage. If you're outraged by the law and don't like the law, then change it. But until then, we follow it as written and interpreted by the courts. Therefore, this case passes to the next stop on the route, and that is the state attorney's office, where they will sit with all the facts, the evidence, and the law, and make a charging determination. In the meantime, as it was the intention of the Florida legislature, Draca is not to sit in jail while that process is occurring. We're very fortunate in this circuit to have an experienced state attorney, and I know he will apply the law accurately and fairly and reach the correct legal decision based on all the facts once he receives the case. And we will continue to do all we can to support the state attorney in the investigative process.
Well, okay. That was Sheriff Gualtieri of Pinellas County talking about the application of the so-called Stand Your Ground law in a case in which we see one man shooting and killing, this is Draker, shooting and killing another man. And the demand is, the public's demand is, get him in jail now. What Gualtieri is saying is that there are certain provisions that come with the Stand Your Ground law as it relates to the authority of law enforcement. They are to hand this case over to the state attorney after they have basically done some preliminary work. But as far as he's concerned, he says, he is okay. He feels all right with being in compliance with the Stand Your Ground law as it relates to the law enforcement part of it. And now it goes to another phase, which will require the state attorney to do investigations and to decide whether a charge is to be made, and if so, what charge is to be made. And then the case goes through a series of tests before it gets to court. Okay, so at this juncture, I want to ask you, based on what you've heard, what have you heard? 888-874-4888. What did the sheriff convey to you that either impressed you or that raised more questions in your mind? Was it a plausible explanation about how law enforcement, according to the law, because this is written by the state legislature, was he correct to say that he took the proper course and followed the directions or directives of the law by not arresting the killer, but by gathering the evidence, gathering the witnesses, gathering all the supporting material as is required, he says, by law, and then turn it over to the state attorney, who then takes the case the next leg. Ma'at, you're on the air.
Yes.
What did you hear?
Yes, thank you for that. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, got a new phone here. Listen, it's so simple to me. If Draca had been a black guy, and if the guy, McLaughlin, I'm not quite sure the name, if he had been the one, you know, the white guy, it would be a whole different thing, and we have such a perfect example of it. What about, and I can't remember her last name now, but we need to know it. I think the first name is Marissa. She was somebody nearby in Florida, And she had an abusive husband. All she did was shoot in the ceiling to back him off properly. And she's still dealing with the issue. Luckily, her case got a lot of press at some point, but she's still wearing an ankle bracelet and had to spend a lot of money. So it's just two different scenarios all the time.
Well, in that case, which I happened to cover, I interviewed her about that.
What was
the bullet
name?
Ricocheted.
Last name? What was her last name?
There was a lot of small details in that case. But I want you to concentrate on this particular case and the presentation of Sheriff Bob Gualtieri on why he chose not to go any further. What do you make of his reasons?
Well, it's like the reasoning in the Trayvon Martin case, you know, and Zimmerman was finally arrested after there was a lot of furor and uproar and protests in the community, but it's the same pattern. You know, obviously, if it had been a black guy shooting a white guy, who was backing away, the black guy would be in jail. And the fact that he kept repeating the same talking points over and over, that told me the shallowness of the scope of his understanding.
Well, he was repeating it. I'm not explaining his position, but he was repeating it so that he could be clear to people in so far as he wants the public to understand the process. And this, in his view, was the right thing to do, to not make an arrest, because at this stage in the process, according to the law, as written by the Florida state legislature, this is how it's supposed to go. The fact that many people do other things, he says, does not persuade him at all to follow suit. But he is, in his view, this is what he's communicating, he's following the law as written. Thanks for your comment. Jeff from New Jersey, what did you hear? And what did you find disturbing, or what did you find significant?
I found disturbing his initial, as he began explaining, to tell us that what we've seen is not all that there is, and that we just don't understand what we just witnessed, because that rings of what happened to Rodney King. The other part of it is that he's saying that Draco was not involved in anything criminal. But if Draco is fighting another individual, Draco could be charged with assault and battery. That means some hits and some misses. And that means that he was engaged in criminal activity. And the problem is that we look at this as, we want to be this macho society here in America. We settle things. You know, this is what they did in the Old West. When two men are fighting and one gains an advantage, you cannot cry victim because you just lost. Okay, and there has to be an amendment to this Stand Your Ground law, because it should be a thing where you give the person you're getting ready to shoot a warning, and you can say stop, halt, pull your weapon, and most people will freeze and stop their assault. If they don't, you continue to do what you need to do. But this is caught on tape, so when he pulls a gun and he gets pushed down because he was bested, then he pulls the gun. That shows that he was an enemy, he was a combatant. He was not a victim. And when you're a combatant, that means you are also committing an unlawful act. But his explanations were, barring that, his explanations were clear, and I understand why he couldn't do the arrest. But I think that you have to go back to what was the nature of what was going on. If they were both involved in a fight, then, Draco is also committing a crime. And that's my opinion on it.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting. What do you make of this delineation in the law itself, that it is not up to the cops to determine what happened, but up to the state attorney to decide what happened?
Well, it does
based on
things.
The information they get from the cops.
Yeah, well, that does two things. That buys some time for things to cool down. And the other part of it, it takes the responsibility off of the police officers right then and there. I can't put my finger on it. It allows a gap so that if there is someone that you want to not be prosecuted, you can. You can get them off, and you can bide you time to get around the law, and it buys you time to be a little convoluted in the law. Because the stand your ground thing was made for, really made for people who wanted to shoot people. You know, you have to want to shoot somebody to actually use this law.
But do you appreciate this argument that because of the way the law is set up, that a person who ordinarily would have been carted off to jail and would be sitting there until they could figure out what charges to bring and then the trial, that person is afforded an unusual amount of latitude and consideration in terms of the presumption of innocence. And this affords that person a presumption, a fuller presumption than he would get if the law were simply that the cops show up and on the basis of preliminary information, they arrest.
Well, that to me, no, I don't really buy that. I don't buy that argument.
Spotted me out of the field. Forget
yeah,
that.
I don't buy the argument because there's other things in place that help you to afford it. You go before, you know, you get indicted, you do whatever happens, but you can be released on bail. You can be released on your own recognizance.
The first not thing on is, murder.
That, well, no.
No
but
such it, thing.
It, well, what I'm saying is the first thing you do when you show up to the scene is you grab the guy with the gun because you don't know. How did they investigate, right? How did they investigate whether or not he was telling the truth before they, you know, they let him go before they did any investigation? They didn't arrest him. How do you release a guy saying that, okay, we believe he's telling the truth or we have some idea of it when you hadn't seen all these things? Now that, you know, they're still an ongoing investigation, but the gentleman is walking free.
This is,
you understand? So you're raising
very, very important points here. You're raising very important points, which is why I thought we'd start here in covering this case, because it poses a whole bunch of issues that need to be examined. But
this was
a good place to start.
One of the
Thank
things
you.
That, oh, hold on, oh. Patrice.
Yes, go ahead quickly. We're running out of time.
Oh, sorry.
He left. David from Brooklyn. Based on what you've heard, what is
you know?
What is
I David here.
Yes.
Good afternoon. This kind of struck me in this way, and I'm going to tell you how I think about this. This law in Florida is fantastically bad. As I see it. Someone can actually go and shoot someone, and maybe there are no witnesses around, no cameras, and just claim that this person was going to attack them or attack them and whatnot, and get away with it. So he was just standing his ground, so to speak. And it makes me think of the Trayvon Martin case with this character Zimmerman, who got out of his vehicle to attack a young boy and was able to get away with this by using this law after killing this boy, after he got out of his vehicle and attacked this young boy, Trayvon Martin, and got away with it with this jury of a group of white women who let him go. So, you know, in this case, it's obvious he got out and attacked Trayvon Martin and then killed him and got got freed in a trial, found not guilty after killing someone that he attacked. So this is a crazy law. This doesn't make any sense to me. And
I agree with you wholeheartedly, but I want to ask you a question. Based on the sheriff's explanation of what the law constrains him to do, what the law requires him to do in response to a situation like this, is it the sheriff who is at fault here, or is it the law that is at fault?
I think that this law is a very faulty law because it leaves the opening for people to demonstrate violent contact in terms of killing other people and basing it on so-called stand your ground or self-defense. And I think it's crazy for the sheriff to use this law to feel that he cannot take any action against this person who killed this man. And, you know, that's the way I feel about it. But the interpretation I was hearing from the sheriff, he was telling us that he was constrained from doing anything about it. And I don't see it that way.
Mm. Very good. So in your view, it is the law that we have to look to overall. It is the law that sets the whole tone for how everybody behaved or and to what degree everybody is responsible for their actions in this scenario.
This is an incredibly bad law that leaves open the chance for people to just kill folks and say those folks were a threat to them. And even in the case where the person who perpetrates this crime of murder has attacked that person and gets away with it by saying that he was entitled to his self-defense.
Interesting. Thank you very much. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air and with a little time, I'm afraid. What did you hear from the sheriff that caused you to rethink this whole business of stand your ground law, or that it further confirmed in your mind your thoughts about the stand your ground law?
First of all, it's interesting how he started. He started by saying that people have all kinds of opinions about what happened. And he stated that there was more than one angle.
You're breaking up quite a bit, Lincoln. Are you there? We're losing you and we're losing just about every second word. So we will continue this discussion. I wanted to start it today it's not the end of the discussion today, but because the news conference was held yesterday, I thought it would be good to pick up freshly on what the sheriff had to say and use it as a starting point. We will talk to lawyers. We will talk to the lawyers of the family, and they happen to be lawyers we are familiar with, Benjamin Crump, who represented the family of Michael Brown, the family of Eric Garner, and others, that cases that we have covered here. And we will talk to legal scholars and find out about this law. We will talk to legislators about this law, because there are some very significant inadequacies in the law, and they ought to be exposed and corrected, because essentially they have to do with people's constitutional rights. The law essentially gives great latitude to people who don't deserve it, at least in the sense that we're talking, and it constricts the rights of others who do deserve a larger consideration in these circumstances in terms of how they protect themselves under the law. So thank you very much for using your brain today and your ears for listening so intently, and for bringing to our attention something that we will, lots of things that we will follow up on, but it is important that we at least have a good understanding in the background of what this law compels law enforcement to do. We'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks a lot for listening today.